As season 5 comes to an end, our best season to date, thank you everybody who has downloaded every episode and continues to listen to the Clink Stories of Redemption. Our last episode for this season is going to be dedicated to a wonderful man who we lost, someone who came into season 1 and gave us a wonderful story of redemption, Bernie Matthews. Rest easy, old friend, and our condolences and thoughts go out to your loved ones and family. Enjoy Bernie Matthews' story of redemption.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record. For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
Welcome to the Clink, Stories of Redemption, Season 6. How good is it? I hope that you've been enjoying our episodes so far in this new season. We put it out there, you guys wanted to tell us who you wanted on the Clink. This guest is another request, David Obida. Did I say that right?
Yeah, close enough, brother, Obida.
Obida.
Obida. I'll forgive your accent, Obida. I'll forgive your Aussie accent.
All the way from NZ, bro.
Yeah.
Shot, bro.
Yeah, mate.
Dave, welcome. Welcome to the Clink. I have been somebody that's kept an eye on your journey for a little bit now. I know a little bit about you. I think I'm going to learn a lot more today, and I think our guests are going to really hear a lot more insight into who you were and who you are and what you're up to today. Doing great things over there in New Zealand. You are a 501, a deportee. I want to get into that. We've never had a deportee on here, and I think it's important for our viewers to understand what it is that you and others have gone through. Some of you really haven't done anything wrong to be deported, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we talk about these days crimes and stuff like that, but it's a little bit beyond a joke, I think, to the level of crime it is now that you have to commit before they'll send you back to New Zealand. You were in Melbourne.
Yes, brother.
You grew up in Melbourne?
I went there at 14 years old, brother. So, yeah, my earlier life I'd spent in New Zealand and then came as a teenager to Melbourne.
New Zealand, how was that growing up and why did you come to Australia?
First of all, brother, thank you so much for letting us on the Clink, brother. Big fan, by the way, man. You know, you're the podcast king, man, so I'm trying to model myself after you, brother.
You're doing pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. Much appreciated for you to let me jump on here,
welcome,
man.
Welcome, brother.
So growing up in New Zealand, bro, you know, brother, to be honest, man, my upbringing was quite good, man. You know, I had a good upbringing, weren't rich or nothing, but had a good mum, single mother, Christian values, you know, so I grew up in a Christian home. I'm not, you know, as a teenager, I strayed from that path, but I'm back in the church now. So, but yeah, brother, grew up in a Christian household. Always a bit rebellious though, you know what I mean? Even though I did have that upbringing, didn't have much restraint, you know, my mum was quite lenient, you know, sort of, I could just go out. And then as I sort of grew up as well, you know, she was a hard worker, you know, worked two jobs. So even though she did want the best, you know, it just left me a lot of time to myself, you know what I mean? So I did start straying at a young age, sort of hanging out with kids in the neighborhood. Dad was in and out of the picture as well. You know, tough guy, you know, doesn't really muck around much, you know, so, but yeah, he came into the picture more later on. But yeah, as a youth man, grew up, yeah, in the church, grew up in a country town called Tokoroa, like 20,000 people, if that. Gang presence though, you know, so gang presence in the town though. A lot of islanders, you know, a lot of Pacific Island Māori. Then moving to Auckland, Yeah, just bro, real petty stuff, you know, getting suspended from high school, you know, for graffiti a few times. Yeah, just always had a bit of a rebellious side.
So, if I can put it pretty clearly, it wasn't too bad consider what we, I guess, understand is the norm over there of the young crew coming through the communities over there and around, you know, the different areas. Quote me if I'm wrong, but I watched something just recently where there's, you know, a lot of these areas, every second house is a gang member, and it's just culture over there now that, you know, these generations are following one after another.
Yeah, so the gang scene is a little bit different here in New Zealand, as in, yeah, in Australia it's more motorcycle clubs, and they operate, yeah, a bit differently to say the gang scene here in New Zealand, even though they wear the patches and that over here. It's sort of hard to explain, eh? But I mean, I guess
Can you explain it?
that.
Because, you know, I've never really gone in depth in it, and I know that this will lead into, you know, part of your story as well. I just think, you know, having it from somebody growing up there, knowing exactly what you've seen and just understanding how it is. I mean, look, as somebody that's been in a club and understands the whole gang mentality and motorcycle club, I'm unsure how structured it is in New Zealand in reference to the clubs or gangs, but you seem to see every suburb is a notorious gang.
Yeah, no, that is the reality of it, brother.
Yeah.
The thing is, so the 501 deportee scene has completely changed the New Zealand crime scene, you know, so it's completely changed nowadays. But when I was here before all of that, it was very unstructured, bro. There wasn't much, there's a lot of fighting between gangs.
Yeah.
It's not sort of, it wasn't sort of frowned upon. Like, so what, from what I saw of Melbourne, there is fighting between different motorcycle clubs and that, but there's a bit of a, it's not just all out fighting though, you know, because it's more structured over there. There's a lot more money to be made over there.
In New Zealand or in
No,
Melbourne?
no, in Australia.
Oh,
In
yeah.
Australia. So there's a lot more money to be made over there. Whereas here, it wasn't, it's, yeah, there just wasn't that boundary of like, say, like, you know, blood is bad for business type thing. You know, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of fighting between the gangs here, a lot of fight for territory because it's such a small country as
Yeah.
well.
Yep.
And per capita, that, you know, this is like one of the highest number of gangs in the world here in New Zealand because it's only about 4 million people here, 5 million people. So that's less than the city of Melbourne,
Well, that's what
you
I
know.
find mind blowing is, I mean, my wife's a Kiwi and, you know, she grew up in Auckland and all up around the north there, but, you know, she wasn't exposed so much to that either. Do you go over to, is it like going over there and just driving out to a suburb, say in Sydney or Melbourne, and then all of a sudden, you know, like we know where, like me growing up in the Western suburbs and the housing commission, it was all gang. That's just how it was, you know, your Islanders, your Kauris, your Asians. But is it like that in New Zealand? Do I just come over there, get on a plane, go, oh shit, I'm in the wrong suburb. Next minute, I'm looking at Crips and Bloods and going, wow, fuck, what's going on here? I mean, is that so in your face?
Yeah, brother. Here in the city, yes.
In Auckland itself?
In Auckland itself, more on the south end of Auckland. Like here in Auckland, like with the whole like drug scene and all of that, like there is no just like opening up shop and you're gonna start dealing. Like that's not gonna happen here in Auckland, you know what
Is
I
it
mean? Like you'll
mainly the
get.
ice, the pee over there, that is the problem? I mean, because
Yeah,
you don't have a big
pee's the
coke, you don't
massive
have a big
problem here.
coke problem, do you? Like, it's not
No,
like.
oh, coke. So, like I said, the 501 deportee has changed New Zealand crime
Ah,
scene
the
massively.
mentality's
Because
come
the thing is,
across.
you've got a whole bunch of Aussies. Well, Aussies, you know, but born here in New Zealand, that have sort of come back here, and bringing all the connections with them from Australia. You know, you've got a lot of motorcycle club members
Yeah.
that have come back here. You know, like, man, there's so many gangs from Oz that are here now that I never thought would have started here, you know, that have started chapters here now. But it's real prevalent in the country towns here, man. So even though Auckland is, you know, the hub, of course, because it's the city, the country towns here are crazy, man.
Really?
I'm telling you, yeah, no, it's flooded with pee. There's pee everywhere.
See, to me, you'd want to go to the country in a place like that and go and experience the beautiful countryside, the marae, and, you know, all these gorgeous visions that we see when we're not from New Zealand. And it's sort of in hearing that, it's like you'd be a bit worried going there.
It's unfortunate, man. Like, because really in the country towns as well, like the suicide rate is out of control here, eh? Like, there are just so many teenage kids killed that kill themselves here. Some as young as 10, younger. You know what I mean? Like,
That's
killing
heavy.
themselves, you know?
Yeah,
It's
no, that's
just,
heavy. Is
yeah, it's
poverty a
crazy.
big issue over there in these areas? To be, you know, the drugs obviously create unrest in the home, and then, you know, like the abuse obviously within the home, whether it be domestic violence or child abuse. I mean, is that a major issue over there where young kids are becoming directed into the gang life and street life from a very young age due to the fact that mum and dad aren't there? They're just, you know, or mum's not there, or.
Like I said, the difference between the gangs here I've seen as well is that, yeah, kids do get recruited, you know, whereas in Australia, in Melbourne anyway, with motorcycle clubs, I didn't really see that at all, where motorcycle clubs would recruit, you know, teenagers and
It's
younger,
not
you know.
like that. No, it's not.
Yeah,
Look, I mean,
that's what I
let's
mean.
be honest. You know, every club or outfit in Australia has their feeder or up and comers. You know, there's always the crew that wants to run the ball up and, you know, prove themselves and make a name. And that's just always been that way. It always will be that way. Well, ever. That's this gang mentality. But, you know, definitely not. I mean, look, I remember when I was in the club within the area that I lived in, your parents would come to us and say, you know, my son's causing trouble. He's a teenager. He's smoking weed. They'd actually come to us for help, you know, to try and pull their kids out of the shit. People don't know that, you know what I mean? And the worst thing that could have happened once, you know, the policing, especially in Queensland, once they brought in all the legislation and rules, which they'll blanket it across Australia in very soon. WA is just
Very soon,
taken to it.
brother.
Sydney's no tolerance. Is the fact that parents that were struggling, single mums, or that just, you know, didn't mind stepping out, you know, that went to the local pub or whatever, would have that conversation with that bloke that they knew was a little bit rough, rugged, might have been in a club. Next thing you know, Johnny's getting pulled up after school by a big burly bloke on a Harley, and they're like, "Boy, get your shit together, you know, like your fucking mum's worried about you, mate. I'll catch you out here, you're selling weed or you know, doing things that you shouldn't be doing, graffiti, whatever it might be, you're gonna get a kick up the ass, and there's all my brothers behind me, they're gonna fucking watch as well." That was true. That's what happened. We did that, we helped. There's none of that anymore, which means that chain of command and respect through community as well. You know, we look at the negativity side of certain things and gangs and that, but there's also a little positive there as well. Brother, you left New Zealand. Why did you leave New Zealand to come to Australia?
By that point, my mum had moved over there. She had met a man. Basically, I didn't want to go over there because I didn't, you know, stepdad, so I didn't really like him. So I ended up staying here. But then, you know, I started getting kicked out of home. Just real petty stuff, brother. You know what I mean? Nothing major, man. But yeah, getting kicked out of home, running away from home. You know, sort of hanging out with the wrong crowd, brother. Smoking weed now, you know. Just petty stuff, man. And then I just yeah, I ended up, I didn't want to go to Australia
No.
because when I was here in New Zealand, I didn't know anything about Australia, to be honest. I didn't know back then here in New Zealand, we didn't know much about Australia as in terms of you just see, you know, what is it? Crocodile Dundee, you know what I mean? Like that was what I thought of Australia. I'm thinking like there aren't many cities, you know, like that's what I thought, you know what I mean? Like it's all outback, like that's sort of what I
Well,
was
if
thinking. I knew I had,
that's
I
there, don't
knew,
worry about that. There's plenty of
yeah,
outback and crocodiles.
like I knew I had family there, but yeah, I just even when I heard that, I'm like, I got family in Australia, like I wonder what they're like, you know what I mean? Like,
Were
yeah,
they are they
so.
like first cousins or immediate family, auntie and
I
uncles
got
or?
immediate family there, but yeah, I got extended family is there as well,
Yeah.
in Melbourne, all across Australia. But yeah, so that's why I ended up getting moved over, brother. So I didn't have anywhere to stay anymore because I kept getting kicked out. So I had nowhere else to go but Australia.
So a one-way ticket to Melbourne, eh?
Yeah, brother, one-way ticket to Melbourne.
And what was that like landing in Melbourne? And like you say, you know, you've come into a foreign country, although we're only across from each other, it's not your country. When I say in that with respect, it's not home. It's not somewhere where you're familiar with, you know, you're in a foreign place. What is Auckland compared to in Australia as a city?
Oh, brother, when I landed in Melbourne, I mean, big difference. Yeah,
Yeah, right.
massive difference. heat. You know what I mean? I remember coming off the play, man, and just feeling that heat wave. You know, I arrived in like, you know, December, January, I think February, right, and like right during a heat wave, eh? And just as soon as you open that door, I was like, whoa. You know, 40 degrees, you know, humid, you know, the grass is brown, you know, it's not green anymore, you know what I mean?
Nah, there's every chance it'll catch a light in the next couple of days and set a fire somewhere around the airport.
Yeah, so I come to Melbourne, but yeah, big difference, a lot more nationalities as well. So when I went to Melbourne, I moved to Springvale, which even though there is like a bit of a Pacific Island population there, it's more a Vietnamese area.
Yeah.
So coming to a Vietnamese area from New Zealand, it's quite confusing. It's like, and then, you know, there are people like, you know, selling heroin on the corner.
Oh, yeah. Hook, jung, like, jung, jung, everywhere. Cut, 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 cut. Don't wah. Cut, cut, cut.
Don't wah.
Oh, you see these little Vietcon running around. Don't wah, don't wah. Cut you up, you fucker. All for a cap. Know. Next minute, you see them on the corner and they're eating their barn mitt and spitting out fucking little balloons. And, oh, it's ugly. Things that you look back on now and go, how putrid was that?
Oh, no.
Sydney was the same. You used to literally go to the Vietnamese, say, bakery, and we grew up on those chicken and pork rolls at Bar Mitz. That's what they ate. They were like $2.50 each, and, you know, as a street kid, that was the best nutrition feed. It was beautiful. But do you want something else? And then you see old mate over the back there, he want a cap, and you want to do it a special. He want to do it a special Bar Mitz, special Bar Mitz, please. Next minute you see him walking off and he's scratching and itching. He can't wait to have a shot and fucking smoke his gear or whatever. Oh, God. You know, and all you wanted was just your breakfast, your bar meat. You know, was it like that for you where you were? Did you see that?
You know, they're selling heroin everywhere, man. Yeah. Like, me coming from New Zealand, though, like, so heroin isn't a thing in New Zealand, even now. So it's like, it's all real new to me, you know,
Was it intimidating?
Even the schools were different. The schools were different in the sense as well that, so the school that I went to, even though it was majority, I went to Westall, so that's the majority were Pacific Island. Yeah, like there was no gang scene sort of at all. You know what I mean? Like, even though there's a lot of Islander kids, there's no like gang influence at all. Like nobody's got parents who are in gangs.
That's interesting, isn't it? Well, I suppose it's different, completely different to where you've come from.
Yeah.
Generations and generations you've grown up, you know, where you've just come from. It's all gang. It's all gang life.
So coming to Melbourne, it was different, man, for sure. But, you know, yeah, by the point I had come here, you know, because I didn't get along with my stepdad. So it didn't take long, bro, for me to end up running away from home in Melbourne and hanging out on the street, connecting with a whole bunch of other kids who are hanging out on the street as well. You know, getting into drugs slowly and then, you know, stealing cars, burglaries, robberies, armed robberies, and then, yeah.
How did everybody take you in the community, all your new peers and that? Like, you know, there's this Islander fellow who's just come over from NZ and everybody has this mindset, you know, it's all gang culture and mentality. Were you seen as, fuck, bro, he's one of the bros, you know, he's one of the boys, yeah? Whereas you and I are having this conversation now and, you know, you speak openly and honestly. You were just a Christian boy from a fairly modest background. But, you know, here you are in Australia. Let's put the vest on the facade. Yeah, bro, fuck, it's all G, my G.
You're spot on there, brother. That is how it is. They sort of look at you like, he's just come from New Zealand, you know. And this and that, but because a lot of people that do have just come over from New Zealand are usually do come from, you know, that sort of gang scene all of that. And a lot when they do come here immediately start getting into fighting and just all of that sort of stuff. So,
how was it for you though over that period? You know, you talk about the drugs. What sort of drugs were you start? Just weed or was it starting to get into the powders and stuff like
just
that?
Just weed. Later on it was ice. Back in New Zealand it wasn't ice, just weed. But yeah, coming over here over time, ice, bit of coke, you know. Never really heroin. I tried heroin in prison though. So prison I did a little bit more drug use than out on the street, like with the harder stuff.
You hadn't done any juvenile time at this time, had you?
No, I haven't done any juvenile time at all.
Oh, wow. So,
I stayed out of the spotlight when I came here to Melbourne, even though I was, like, by the time I went to prison at 19, Like, I was, like, the only one out of all my friends who hadn't done any time. You know, I'd been arrested heaps, though. Like, I'd been arrested and all of that all the time. But, you know, taken home or taken wherever, beaten up even, you know, and then just dropped off. But, yeah, never any juvenile time.
So that sets a little bit of a different platform to most, because 95% of those of us that have been to jail generally come through the system as a juvenile. And, you know, you talk about gang affiliations, street gangs and crime. Well, it just goes hand in hand, and you just keep learning more every time you get locked up, or your crew starts to grow, your notoriety starts to grow, you know, individuals come, they go, they die. How was that sort of transition for you coming into being an adult? You're a man now, you've been there a couple of years, starting to, I mean, obviously you would have had a real sort of hard presence if you were chopping into the ice as well. That would have had a lot of sway on your personality, your crimes. Were you sort of seen as, fuck, man, that's Dave, he gets the shit done? Or, you know, what? How was that in the perception of your peers?
Oh, in the perception of my peers, man, to be honest, man, so I was always the skinny fella, you know what I mean? I was always the skinny dude. Known as a thief, you know what I mean? Known as a burglar, you know, that was my main thing, was doing houses and all of that around the area. Just known as a real bad crim, you know, just a bad crook. But yeah, at the same time though, I had never been caught for anything. By the time I went to prison, I was the last one out of all of my group of friends that actually entered the system.
Entering the system, you're 19 years of age. What was your charge, if I can ask? And you don't have to say
So my first charges were, burglary, brother.
Yep.
Just breaking into shops, man, in the local area. You know, I broke into a whole bunch of them. Just real standard stuff, man. But, yeah, I ended up getting caught for that one because I was just drunk that time. So, yeah, I'd done it sloppy, you know. So, and assault as well. Assault had happened. And so I did a 9 months for that.
How'd that go? And where did you go?
I went to Malmesbury.
So what's Malmesbury as in a Classo? And talk to us, because a lot of people don't understand. Jail in Australia is different in every state. Classos, your security levels, your crimes, the laws are all the same. You're going to go to jail in reference. But, you know, your time and where you go and how reception and jails and transfers, gang units and all this sort of shit, it's just different in every state. How was it in Melbourne?
That first time I went to, so in Melbourne, they've got like a 18 to 21 facility called Malmesbury.
So is that like your young offenders?
Yeah. Yeah. From 18 Sydney, to 21. So like young adults. Mm. So I went there on my first sentence, but I came through, you know, the cells, you know, went to court from the cells, from Dandenong cells. Then got sentenced there. And then I just went straight through.
Do they put you all in a main jail where you're with just everybody, even though you're a young offender, and then you get classoed out of there as what? What are you classoed as, an A or a B or something like that?
Yeah,
or is it?
Brother, yeah. So because I was sentenced to Malmesbury that time, that isn't considered like mainstream, like adults.
So it's like a C classo, is it? Like a medium?
Yeah, yeah, brother. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, sort of like a camp, you know. So I went there, but yeah, you normally do come through Melbourne Assessment Prison, which I can. Yeah, so that was next sentence after that. So I did three sentences over there, but that first one was just at Malmesbury. So I went there, did my 9 months.
Can I just ask you? And it's something that I know because I've seen it and been there, but. I mean, I was 18 and got sent to Long Bay. That was it. I went to the RIC and then I was in the SIP. So for me, there was no young offenders. But I know people that went to young offenders, and it was worse, they reckon, sometimes than the main. Like, you would want to be in the main jail just because of all the young blokes trying to staunch out and, you know, trying to prove themselves, be hard cunts and, you know, gangster on. Trying to make a name. Is that how it was down there as well at that period?
Yeah, brother, yeah. So when I ended up going to proper adult prison, I thought it was heaps better, you know.
I've heard many men say the same thing. They wish they'd never gone to young offenders. They'd rather be in the main. They know where they stand. They know, what's going on. You shut your mouth, you do your jail, mind your business. Don't try and be a sick cunt because you'll get cleaned out.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, exactly, brother. Yeah,
you know, so, but the mentality of the young offenders, unfortunately, is coming off the street is who's going to be the toughest little gangster in here and, you know, who's going to get pumped.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I went to did my 9 month stint there, I was pretty standard, brother. I went in. There was a couple Islander boys there who I didn't know, but were from the area though that I was from. So I just ended up linking up with them. Bringing in weed. Started getting stoned, and so it was pretty cool introduction
Was it
into
all
Malmesbury,
Pacific Islanders together, Samoan, Tongan, Māori, like Fijian, that sort
Nah,
of?
not there, not
It
there.
wouldn't have
But
been,
at
would it?
that place, though, it was majority of the clients there were Pacific Island and African. So,
African as well
but
down there.
yeah, in Melbourne, yeah, there's quite a big Sudanese population, Somalian,
I'm aware of that now. I didn't realize how long back that was.
yeah, it's more recently now it's actually exploded. But yeah, at that time, but yeah, no, I just did my little stint there, brother. Just pumped iron, man. I put on like 40 kilos in there, brother. I went out, I wasn't skinny
No,
anymore.
you weren't. I've seen photos of it. You're a fucking beast. Like, you actually, not on pissing in your pocket. You said you were a skinny bloke before, known as the skinny burglar, but man, the pictures I've seen, I don't know what lagging it was, but wow, you put some weight on and good shape.
So yeah, I blew out and when I went inside straight away. But because I had that behind me, because I was always a skinny dude, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to get out the skinny dude anymore, And also just to beef up, just to, because the other boys are big as well. If you're getting into a blue, you want to have a bit of size on you in there, because when you're blueing in the cell,
There's nowhere to
size
go.
does help.
That's
Size
right.
does help in that narrow
You
cell.
become a
So
rag doll otherwise.
yeah, brother, yeah. So but yeah, no, I did my little stint in there. Got out for like 2 months, man. You know how it is. Like once you've sort of had that taste of the inside, man, it's very hard to sort of stay out. So I got out for like 2 months. Just got straight back into the drugs, bro. Yeah, coke, ice.
So had your level increased of your intake and, your addiction to, I mean, we can openly say that you would have been addicted at period, wouldn't you? I mean, surely if you're on the pipe or, smoking that, what do you call it? Ice pee, whatever you want to call it. I mean, people deny it, but it's addictive.
Oh yeah, no, it's addictive, all right, man. I mean, anyone that denies that, yeah, it's addictive, all right.
Did you find, Dave, that it really took control of you?
Well, because I was only out for 2 months that time, and then afterwards as well, it was like it didn't really get that chance to take a large grip of my life, because yeah, I just ended up going back inside for robbery this time.
Armed robbery?
No, nah, just robbery,
Just robbery.
just robbery. So I got 2.5 years for that, and then I went back inside, and then that sentence, I went to prison, still 19, and then I went to
So was that a
prison.
top or a bottom? 2.5.
That was top, brother. I ended up doing my full time because of incidents I was getting to in prison.
So here you are, you've come out of the Young Offenders, you're 19, you're back on the streets, you've run out hectic, you've got on the pipe, that's what it is. You're back in there. You're not even giving yourself a chance, and here you are back in the main jail. Where was your head at this stage? And talk us through that period of your life.
So when I came back to prison, so like I said, brother, you go from the cells, remanded in custody. So in Melbourne, you go through the yellow sub, they call it. So that's like the holding cells underneath Melbourne magistrates. So you go through there, that's sort of your first taste, a bunch of people hanging out off the streets, everyone's fresh off the street. Had another two Islander fellas that was there with me. One was my co-offender, and one was the same age as me, the other one, but he was sort of that. Well, they were both of them, and my co-offender was a bit older than me as well, so they already knew the system and how it's going to work and all of that. So I had them there with me. But yes, as soon as I come in, bro, it was like, well, look, realistically, I've been doing this from a teenager. Prison's probably going to be in and out sort of gang type stuff will be the part that the course of my life. So yeah, at that time I came in, it's just like, yeah, I want to sort of build a reputation for myself in here. Yeah, just sort of clout chase, So when I came into prison that time, we yeah, so from the yellow sub, from the sub, you go to Melbourne Assessment Prison, which is the induction prison of the state of Victoria. So you'll go through there. You'll get classoed out from there.
What
You'll
was your
get
class, though, the second time?
Yeah, in the state of Victoria, when you come in, if you're on remand, you'll be a classified as a
A1, so.
a asterisk. So
Okay.
you'll get put on a asterisk as a remand prisoner. So from there, I went to Melbourne. Well, I went to the MAP, sort of got introduced into how things are gonna work. Came to the cell. I got taken to my cell. One of the boys grabbed my things, took me to the cell. There's like, oh, my cellie was there. He's sleeping on the bottom bunk. Like my mate, the bro tells him, chuck your shit on the top. That I'm gonna sleep down there. And but I'm sort of like, oh, bro, I don't really mind where I sleep. But then the bro's like, yeah, no, we don't sleep on the top. So the other guy ended up chucking his stuff on the top. And these were just little things that I was learning. You know what I mean? At the time. And yeah, I was just really
For
keen
tho
on
for those
just.
that don't understand what we're talking about, do you want to just explain a little bit more what that's like, telling somebody you're sleeping on top as opposed to the bottom bunk?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, it's just, I guess it's just looked as the preferable bunk, eh? Like, in not everyone's
The
like this,
quickest
though.
one to the floor.
If yeah. But yeah,
someone's
that
gonna
is.
sneak a, you want to be up on your feet real quick. But then again, I reckon you could come off the top ropes and just fucking whack.
Yeah, brother. I always
Unfortunately,
just thought it's with the toilet, eh? Because when you're lying down, it's just easier to go use the Vasco when you're on the
that's
bottom bunk,
fair. Yeah, that's true. And if you haven't got the TV remote, it's like get the stick and change the channel.
But yeah, so that was something that I learned in there.
So it is culturally connected down there too, where I know that in the New South Wales jails, definitely, you've got your Koori, your Islanders, and your Muslims, and it's just different cultures, different, and they tend to pull each other into their own clique. Generally, you don't really, unless you know them, want to take anything off anybody, because come buy up day, it always costs you a lot more. But if you're smart about it, and somebody, and like there's some genuine good people in there that don't want to see harm, they just want to see a brother do all right, especially someone coming off the streets.
Oh yeah, nah, for sure, brother, for sure. Yeah, like that's just sort of a courtesy thing, eh? Like when
Yeah.
you sort of do walk in, they will help you out.
Did you get some megarang?
Yeah, brother,
Did you
get some
get a tin of
megarang.
tuna?
Yeah,
Was it
Cyrene.
chili tuna? Was it chili?
Cyrene
Sorry,
tuna.
chili tuna. How good. Fuck, they're expensive.
Sexual bushel coffee.
Oh, bro. Fuck, now you're making me hungry and thirsty. Ooh, the memories. Nah. Putrid.
Yeah, future,
Fucking
right, brother.
putrid. Oh. Yeah, no, they're horrible thoughts. Ah, dear. It is confronting, isn't it? Like, it really is. And it doesn't matter who you are. You can sit there and talk as tough as you want. I think everybody within themselves sort of realizes, fuck, I'm in jail. And you've got to really just switch on.
For sure, brother, for sure. Like, yeah, as I said, I just wanted to sort of be in the mix straight away. I got into a blue, straight away with a Koori bloke. Just because I thought he had said something. I don't even know if he said it though, but I just went and just confronted him straight off the bat. Yeah, I just wanted to, well, in a way, that's sort of a protection thing as well, because that keeps you safe. Because if people see, like, oh, nah, this guy, he will go on with it, because that is sort of a reputation you want in prison, in a way, because then at least people will leave you alone, and then people won't cross the line and all of that.
It's hard because you go in there to do your own jail, and that's the one thing you're told: do your own time, don't do anyone else's. But if
exactly,
you're gonna
brother.
do your time, like, and you like, oh, fuck, I remember, like, here's 6 years. Well, that's a long fucking time, man. You upset someone, you can't duck and weave through the system. You can't dodge. You gotta stand up. You gotta have a crack. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You hope that's enough for people just to let you do your time.
Like, drugs plays a big part in all of this, you know what
Were
I
you
mean? If you come
chasing?
in and yeah, so yeah, I did get into that sort of a scene. If you come into prison and you aren't in the drug scene, you're not interested in doing drugs, it is a lot easier to stay out of everything, way easier. But if you are coming to jail and you sort of are chasing, you will get involved in the politics and things will happen. Like,
What was that like for you down there in the system, without sort of being too descriptive? I mean, I suppose we can talk pretty open. It's common knowledge now, but
yeah, it's common knowledge, brother.
Was it more the bupe that you were chasing, or was it ICE that was in there that you wanted? Or, I mean, talk to us about that. How was it to get not specifically time, place, and names, but was it available? And you know, did you get what you wanted?
Yeah, so coming to prison, man, like I said, my co-offender was there, so he was pretty, you know, well-versed in the mix of what's going on. So, you know, there were deals of, you know, weed that we had, things like that. I didn't know much about Bupe. I had used Bupe on the outside before, but I knew nothing about it. Just this guy I knew had been on it, and he had chucked us some, and I remember, like, man, that, you know, that lemony taste, and then next minute, you know, I'm on the nod, and I was like, man, what is that stuff? But then, yeah, I come to prison, and then
you go to the shower, and there's 50 of them in there sharing a fit, mixing up on the spoon, like,
yeah,
the fit's fucking blunt as they're sharpening it on the concrete. Next minute, they're trying to find a vein. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, brother.
Like,
sends
people to... like they've had ice anyway. It's like they're speeding off their face. I watch blokes that used to just be machines, train, like, and I'd be like, man, this bloke should be asleep. He should be on. He should be so chilled. No, yeah. Totally the opposite.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Why? Why does it do that?
Yeah, who knows, eh? Who knows? I think prison plays a part of it as well because, like, you now you've got a buzz, you know what I mean? So it does give you the motivation to train. Whereas on the outside, most people that would do that, they won't be training. You know what I mean? The training is the last thing they're going to be doing. So I think prison plays a part of it as well, you know, sort of the mentality. But you know how it is. So when you first go to prison, so from the MAP, I went to the MRC, Metropolitan Remand Center. So that's a bit bigger. So MAP's only a small little induction jail. And then I went to MRC, and it's like... you see a whole bunch of people walking around. Like, that's all you really see. Coming in fresh off the streets, you're looking around, all you see is just people cutting laps. You know, yeah. That's all you see, but then...
It's like Pitt Street or the main street of Melbourne in peak hour. People are just walking back forth. Yeah. It's fucking crazy.
So, coming in, you're just seeing that, you know what I mean? You don't think there's much going on. But then as the years go by and then you do sort of get in the mix, you can see everything. You know what I mean? Like, it's all not going just people on. Walking around. Yeah, it's all going on. You know what I mean? It's all going on. But yeah, when you first go in, you don't realize. You just think, oh, yeah, everyone's just walking around. Everything's just, you know. But yeah, as time goes on, you realize, yeah, it's all happening. You know, deals going down, people on the phone, you know, everyone's going back and forth doing stuff. So you got to pick up on that, though, you know, and that takes time to be able to sort of, you know, it gets to the point in prison where you're just looking at everyone, you know what I mean? Like, oh, why are those two people talking? You know, I've never seen them talking before, you know, they're walking in the cell. All right. So you can sort of see everything. Yeah.
You got involved with a particular crew. You started to really make some waves in the system, the crew, the young crew that you had, and how was that like for you guys? I mean, how did the older crew sort of take to the way that you boys started to really, you know, kick off in the system with the jail mentality, the strength in numbers, because you were building, weren't you?
Yeah.
And, you know, you become quite notorious, you and the crew in there. And I won't say you can speak of, if you want to, the gang name or what have you, but definitely made news.
So I don't mind speaking on it a bit. So we formed a prison gang in there called GFAM. Me and my friends from the streets, and people who basically from all over Melbourne, you know, because like I said, all of my mates had come through the youth justice system. So,
were they all Pacific Islander, the GFAM, or could you have been any culture?
Large majority, especially initially, but nah, there's some Aussie boys in there, you know, who, well, Aussie boys that have sort of grown up around islands and stuff.
So they had to understand culture and the way the boys were.
Yeah, brother. Yeah. So, yeah, some Aussie brothers. Lebanese even as well, African. But, yeah, majority is islander. So we sort of... It actually started back then when we were sort of just running those little missions. We were like, oh... Well, the thing is, when we first come to prison, we wanted to join a motorcycle club. You know what I mean? Like, that was sort of our plan, like... Because coming into prison, we didn't know anything about motorcycle clubs, really.
Are they got much pull in the Melbourne system?
Yeah, they do, brother. Yeah, they do. Yeah. Especially with just people who aren't actually members but affiliates. You know what I mean? So you've got like Lebanese families and who are not all are members, but yeah, just affiliations and things like that. But yeah, I guess they would have more pull out on the street than they do in prison, especially in Melbourne. But yeah, because like I said, when we come in, we didn't know anything about motorcycle clubs. We're not in that scene, you know, but we want to get a Harley, you know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't mind getting a Harley and getting a patch on and all of that.
Nike's on, my Nike bikey.
Yeah. So that was attractive, you know, as it is. But then, yeah, as time went on, we just ended up forming our own sort of clique in there.
How did it go with the squad identifying you guys as an internal gang? I know in the system, you know, the squad are well and truly up on their intel these days. Used to be able to get away with so much, but they literally just open your door and run in on you and just pump the fuck out of you. They don't care. Yeah. You're going to get flogged. The moment that door comes open, they say, oh, yeah, stand at the back of the cell. Mate, they've already got people at the back door of your Segro cell waiting to fucking rush you from that door while they're coming in the front door. You got no chance. You got to swing and just fucking hope for the best. Was it like that in Melbourne? Did you guys, you know, get some serious fucking attention from the internal gang squads and stuff?
So we started, like... Yeah, it's buzzy though, because when we started, we just started as a crew, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to form this gang and that. But then, yeah, when we started actually getting, you know, because, yeah, the main, initially, our reputation was just for really, running missions and that, and also fighting with the staff, you know what I mean? Fighting with the screws.
Yeah.
So that was where our reputation first sort of built up. You know, there were a lot of riots, you know, that were happening where, you know, screws were getting assaulted. And then that's when we started getting like the light on us. And a lot of boys, started getting sent to the slot or Segro.
Did they have like STG down there? Like your gang unit Supermax or anything like that?
You've got like TOGs, SESGs. So like, you know, bad dogs, you know what I mean? Like, just the baddest fucking dogs. Running in the cell. It's never a fair fight with them, though, you know?
There's nothing you can do before you even get a chance. You can't see shit. You just got to swing and hope for the best.
They're coming with the shields, you know, the helmet, you know. Just...
Takes 10 of them to just put in a little hand lock, your fucking, what do you call them, the plastic fucking locks they put over your wrist. It's not fun, but it pushes one to want to rebel more. Like it really is. It doesn't educate to the point where you want to better yourself. It means fuck you. I'm going to keep running the ball up at you because of the way that you treat me. You know, it's like an animal. You just keep poking an animal in a cage long enough, the animal's going to retaliate. It's not going to be nice. It's not going to walk up and give you a lick on the hand. You know, your boys kicked off pretty hard. And I will touch on this because I think that it's relevant whilst we're on the subject. A high-profile Melbourne underworld figure was attacked, if you will, or, you know, got chopped into, however you want to put it, in Melbourne, in the system, and bang, it all come out and it was the G Family crew. How did that... I mean, we're talking about someone who's extremely high-profile. And I'm not asking for ins and outs. I don't know whether you know. I don't want to know. It's not about giving people up on this fucking show. But, you know, that's setting the bar. And then you guys, there's a big target on the back of that gang now.
So to sort of paint a picture as well. So, like, GFAM in Melbourne, in the Melbourne prison system. So we've got quite a strong presence in there now.
Today, so, still active, strong. Yeah,
still. We have quite a strong presence in the... in the system there isn't a high security unit in Melbourne really where we don't have a group of members in there. Prison is a different place, isn't it, brother? You know how it is. Like, prison is such a unique experience, man, because it's like on the outside there's obviously levels, you know what I mean, of crime and sort of who gets around with who. But prison just really flips that on its head, you know what I mean? Because when you go to prison, it's like those, you know, you could see some junkie that was out on the streets in the unit actually getting around doing bizzo, you know what I mean? Calling shots even, you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, they might get out again and then end up back out on the street though as a bum.
But listen, how is that? How is that? And that is something that I learned at a very young age, is you've got to be very careful about who you do wrong by on the street, because that bloke might have an addiction on the street and be hung out. He could have done 15 years jail before you'd even met him. Yeah. Already had stamped his fucking name in the system. And every time he goes back in the system, he guarantees he's going to have a brand new pair of shoes on his feet. He's going to have plenty of fucking food under his bed. And he's going to have all the drugs that he wants. He'll probably get access to a mobile phone whenever he needs it. Like, this shit's for real. And like you say, you know, but you'll bump him on the street next time he come out and he's just doing the same bone thing down, in the gutter, just having a nod spewing. On the like, corner, you know, you can't judge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's exactly what I
and
mean.
And you will get that. Got.
It's also can work in reverse, though, as well. You know what I mean? You can see some little dude in the unit, you know what I mean? Looks like he's a nobody. But if you've seen this guy on the outside, like, he will shoot you. Like, don't get me wrong. In prison, he might just be some weak, you know, little piddly dude.
He's not a fighter, but he'll pull a trigger. And isn't there, that's the other side of you. You've got people that won't fight you. They'll just put a blade in you. You know what I mean? Then you got fighters that'll just bang. And then you got blokes that, you know, they say, oh, yeah, you're weak. You're a fucking piece of shit, this and that. It's all right, bro. It's all right. I'll get out one day. And they get out, they'll take your family out. Like, you just can't. You cannot have that complacency or that mindset that, you know, there's always going to be, I'm the maddest fucker around, because you're not.
Exactly. But, yeah, so, but in saying that, though, you know, like, in the prison system in Melbourne, like, there's a few, I guess, what you would call underworld figures and, you know, a few different groups. It's just there's politics, you know what I mean? But it's like...
I think the politics, Dave, behind it is everybody's vulnerable.
Oh, yeah, no, for
sure. No amount of money is going to stop you from getting got. In jail, you can think that you've kicked off with a good crew and then all of a sudden that crew is getting handed 100K or 200K from a higher source and they're like, mate, he's no good. He's done wrong by us. He might not have done wrong by the crew. Might be a good bloke all around, but these guys, and now these guys are doing double figures and they're just wanting to feed their families on the outside and, you know, do all right in jail. Next minute, it's on and you're gone.
Yeah.
There's no loyalty, eh? Like, there's no...
Oh, yeah.
You know, a drop or a little bit of cash can flip a whole crew inside out.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's definitely something I've learned, you know, nowadays. Loyalty doesn't mean much, brother. I mean, money talks. You know, money definitely talks. I mean, you know, nowadays, I mean, it doesn't really... Doesn't even really matter if there's paperwork on some people. If they're earning and making money, it's, oh, well, he didn't rat on me, though.
But that was the thing in the day, and I remember it very clearly as a young bloke. If you put someone on the dog and you didn't produce the paperwork in the yard, you got pumped. You got fucking pumped for putting that bloke on the dog. These days, you know, like Johnny will come into the yard and he might have had a blow up on the outside with Davo. Davo's got his click and he goes, he's a fucking weak dog. Well, what do you mean he's a weak dog? He didn't give no one up. No, he's just a weak dog. Next minute, the yard's calling him a dog.
Yeah.
No one's produced paperwork. This poor bloke's getting pumped because fucking Barry and his little clique didn't like Davo. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's that shit?
Yeah. What's that shit? Even if the guy that there's meant to be paperwork on, if he's on a high level of, you know, reputation... Some guy might pull out paperwork and he might end up getting pumped. You know?
Brother, what about all the boneyarders that literally got pulled out of protection because they were on the bupe and they'd put them in the main? Yeah, they'd sit there and protect them and they'd be just absolute fucking scum of the earth. Like, I'm talking shit criminals. I'm not just talking blokes that... And this is not about bagging blokes that are bailed out. There's blokes that are hardcore men that have not bailed out, but, mate, they've just had no options. You know what I mean? And it's happened. And there's... But I'm talking about the straight up fucking no good people, right? That stay in the boneyard because that's where they belong, and yet they're under the arms of all the 5'8s out there, and they're up in the bube, and then God.
Yeah, nah, you know, man. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
man, exactly.
Bro, and you can't say a word or touch more. You get pumped by all the crew.
Yeah, bro.
Go figure that one.
Yeah, go figure. All right.
Anyway, so moving forward from that. You've by now set your sort of mark. You're in the system. Everybody knows who you are, what you're about. How many years have you done? Coming into your third lag.
So I served that 2.5. I got out. I served another 4.5 for recklessly causing, for causing recklessly serious injury. Did 4.5 for that. That was on the top as well.
Full time?
Yeah, I did my full time again.
So you've done best part of 8 years.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, wow. But yeah, I was always ended up doing my full time though, you know, because I was just, you know, blueing on the inside and just, and then because we did develop that reputation, then the screws hate you, you know, Intel hates you, you know, they're not going to do you any favors in there.
Ah, you're the first to get locked down, the last to get a phone call. You get nothing. You get shit.
You get nothing. So, so I did that, did the 4.5, and then, and then I got deported, but I got sent back.
I think that's something that I really want to touch on today, you know, and it's good to, everybody's got a story of redemption, as we constantly say, and that's what this is about, you know. Without your beginning, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, when I hear glorifying any of these crimes or, you know, things that we talk about, especially, you know, for each guest, and I just want to make that clear to the listeners, this is about sharing your story. And that is very valuable because why did you change is the question. And that's what we're about. You were confronted as you come out the gates. Did you know before you come out the gates, that you were going to be arrested again and deported?
Yeah. So 2014, 2015. So basically when I went back in to do the 4.5, the laws changed. So when I did that, the 2 years, they tried to deport me that time. I beat it though, because back then it was easy to beat, you know, people got deported, but it was rare. And then when I come back in again, then the whole laws changed because they changed it in regards to, you know, like terrorists and bikies.
Yep.
So that was the reason, because, you know, ISIS was happening in Middle East, you know, all of that was going off. So they, and then, you know, a whole bunch of people were getting grabbed on conspiracy to commit terrorism charges. You know, they were throwing a whole bunch of people and a bunch of them in jail. So they wanted to start deporting them. And then we got caught up in all of that, you know what I mean? So basically in 2014, 2015, if you committed an offense in Australia,
any offense that was jailable,
any sort of offense, you might not even go to jail. You know what I mean? You might not even get sentenced to time. But if you commit an offense and you aren't a citizen or a permanent resident, in some cases, even if you are a permanent resident, you will get sent back to where you're from.
Yeah, well, there's people that, you know, have been here from basically 6 years of age that are 40, 50 years of age that got families, kids, grandkids, and just that's it. They're gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I got plenty of mates that have, you know, went there as children, you know, babies, didn't even know New Zealand at all. Not just New Zealand, even Sudan, you know, South America. Yeah. Got mates that's, you know, been deported back to Europe, even back to Ireland. You know, these days are Aussie as it gets. You know what I mean? And deported.
So what happens? Because I've never experienced it, and I'm sure many of us wouldn't even know that transition from now being, you know, released from prison, directed into another institution, to which you're basically in limbo as a 501, aren't you?
Yeah, so what happens is you can, if you want to fight your case, once you've served your time, you'll go to a detention centre. So that's like Villawood in Sydney, you've got Broadmeadows in Melbourne, you've got the big one out in Perth, I think there's one out in Queensland, and then you've got Christmas Island.
So are they exactly the same as the jail?
Worse. I've heard worse.
Really?
So people get taken into those places, and yeah, you just sit in there, bro. You just basically sit in there until you fight your case. But the thing is, if you're fighting your case, you will be sitting in there for a couple of years. Like, that's just without even... No, you will know that off the bat. That if
And this is
willing...
before COVID, so you're talking now. Yeah. If you're stuck in there now, who knows how long you'd be in there?
Yeah, no, there's a lot... Yeah, well, with COVID now, because there's a lot of people... Yeah, there's a lot of people that are waiting to actually come back here to New Zealand. You know, they're all just sitting in the detention centers. But yeah, off the bat, if you are going to fight it, you will be sitting in there for a couple of years.
How long were you, Dave, in the detention center?
Nah, I never went to detention, brother. So
why?
when I got out of prison, man, like my co-offender on my last case, the one I was talking about, he sat in Christmas Island for about 3 or 4 years. And he still got sent back. So
yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, that's tough, man. You know, so I was like, yeah, nah, I've sort of served my time here, man. I'm just going to go back.
So you had that choice to put your hand up, go, okay, send me back, and you're on the next plane.
Yeah. They don't have that choice at the moment because of COVID, though. But yeah, that was.
So
yeah.
You could, and as you said, if you decided to fight, that's when you would go to the detention center,
yep,
and be held there for an unknown time,
yep,
and then
at
possibly
least a
be
year.
Sent back.
At least a year.
How did it feel? I guess for you, you probably had that mentality of not giving a fuck still, did you?
Halfway through my prison sentence, that one, I won't go into it, brother, but things that happened in my personal life, that had really changed my perspective, brother. And that last 2 years in prison was tough, man. You know, it had drastically affected me. To the point where I didn't want to live anymore, man. Before that, you know, I didn't really care about being in jail or anything like that. But yeah, towards the end there, brother, I got just a bad experience in my personal life, man. And I just wanted to get out of there by that point, and I just wanted to
this in jail.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah, so I can see it in your face. You know, like this. It hurts to talk about it, obviously.
Yeah, brother. Yeah. So, yeah, it hurt, man. I got hurt, brokenhearted, brother.
Yep.
That last time in prison, man, the last 2 years, brother, it was hell in there, really. Yeah.
Were you dealing with addiction as well at that stage too, or had you said, I'm done
with
it?
I was still dealing with addiction, brother, just to numb the pain, you know, So by the time I got deported, even though I was going through hell, you know, so deportation for me was just like the cherry on top of a shit show, brother. Yeah. You know what I mean? So when I come back here, I knew I didn't want to go back to prison. I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going back to prison. But I lent heavily. I became an alcoholic, you know, when I came back here. Still was on the drugs, you know, but crime was out of the question though for me when I came back here.
So you take crime out of the equation, how, you know, was dealing with the fact of addiction and alcoholism being back in New Zealand? Obviously, you know, you wouldn't have had a real stable home environment. Were you basically just lounge hopping sort of thing?
Yeah, when I come back here, I ended up flatting with my dad. I'm with my old man who was here.
So he came back into your life when you went back?
Yeah, brother. Yep. So I went back there. But yeah, it was tough, brother. I was sleeping on a couch, you know, sleeping on the floor, brother, you know. But luckily enough, I could get straight into work when I came back here, furniture moving. So that was my saving grace, you know. So I just worked 24/7, man. Just work. But drinking all night, you know, also doing meth, you know, smoking pee. But yeah, even though I was doing drugs and drinking, yeah, crime was out of the question for me though.
It's interesting that, isn't it? Because it usually goes hand in hand, and you get to a point where it just happens. You just don't have a choice. You got to feed the demons.
Yeah, nah, exactly. Yeah. Where, luckily I had work, so.
Yeah, so work gives you some sort of, I guess, sense of purpose, feeling a worth.
Yeah.
At what stage did you start to really think, fuck this life, I'm over, you know, smoking this pee, I'm over drinking this grog? And when did you start to really look deep into yourself and realize that there's something else out there for you?
I wasn't for a while, man. Like, as you probably know, man, you know, if you're coming from, you know, in a gang sort of type situation and being a convict, there's levels, you know what I mean? Like, you don't just go straight back into the straight life, you know what I mean? Like, there's levels of it. So it was over a while, but the crime thing stopped, though, when I got deported. But then at the same time, I'm coming back, though, you know, all I know are criminals. You know, I don't know anyone else.
So your whole mix of people's the same sort of mindset?
Yeah, so I don't know anyone else. Yeah. And, you know, also coming from jail as well, it's hard to sort of converse with people that haven't done time, you know, that haven't been in the gang scene.
Well, the language is totally different, isn't it? People don't realize that. It's a totally different language.
Totally different. So that was one thing as well. So when I come back here, because so many people had been deported, I had a whole bunch of mates here who had been deported as well. Some good mates in that. So, so when I came back here, I was still sort of in the mix, still, you know, considering myself an active gang member as well. But at the same time, I'm fighting in that as well, you know, to doing that sort of stuff. But to me, that was the straight head life, you know. Like for me coming back, it's like, all right, I'm drinking, I'm doing drugs, but I'm not doing crime, you know. So it took a little while, man. It took a little while.
Did you find going back to New Zealand as accepting, or did you find it tough initially trying to get your feet back over there and being accepted into the clique, you know, with the boys and okay, how did that go for you? Because I mean, that's once again, you know, like, oh yeah, so what? You've been in Australia, you're in New Zealand now, boy. You're back in fucking out here. You know what I mean? Like that's it. They don't give a fuck. It's like you come over here, but they might have got excited because you're from New Zealand. But go back to New Zealand. Surely there was no excitement.
So like I said, man, so by the time I came back here, like the 501 crime wave has already started here in New Zealand, you know what I mean? So, you know, you're talking thousands of people that have been deported now, probably tens of thousands now that have come back here
A lot of them probably
to
had
New.
interconnecting, you know, lines between them all from being over in
So,
Australia.
yeah, brother. Yeah, especially in the detention centers because they were all put together, you know, people from Sydney, Queensland, Melbourne, they're all in the
Strong
detention
bonds.
centers together. So when the when all the 501s have come back here, it's completely changed the New Zealand gang scene. You know what I mean? Like I'll give you an example. I had a mate who had been deported about 2011. So this is before the whole crime wave. He ended up coming back here. He went to prison as well here though, and he had a rough go of it, eh? Like he ended up doing all right though. He was a tough guy as well, but it was that attitude, you know. He come back here, he's got the Aussie accent, he's Aussie pretty much, lived his whole life over there, and when he went to prison, he had a rough time in there. You know what I mean? Like but now it's completely changed though, you know what I mean? Because now there's thousands of 501s in the prison system here, and also all the gangs that have formed from Australia, you know, all the biker clubs that have come here and formed as well. It's completely changed the scene here. So Australian criminals do have a place here now, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Whereas
wow.
before they didn't. Yeah, before they definitely didn't. Like, yeah, when my mate came back here those years ago, yeah, he had a real rough time in the prison system here. But yeah, th
It's
things have
really
changed
interesting
here.
because, you know, New Zealand crews have held it down for so long and they've always been
Yeah.
staunch and strong about their ways, haven't they?
The thing is, even though the gangs here were a lot tougher, you know, the Aussie gangs that are coming back here, they've got money. You know what I mean? And a lot of money, like money that these gangs here haven't seen before.
I was going to say, you remember earlier in our chat, you were saying that it was never about much money because no one over there really had the
Yeah,
money.
now
It
that's what I
was
meant. Yeah,
all of
so
a
things have
sudden now they
changed.
got chances of buying fat bikes, fat cars, you know, hot chicks hanging off them, you know, like big gold chains, new shoes, all the mad clothes, and you know, getting houses in, I guess, places they couldn't afford to get them before.
Yeah, well, that's what happened, brother. Yeah, a lot of Aussie crims came back here with money. A lot of Aussie bikie clubs came back here, and yeah, brother, you know, they're buying mansions, they're buying all these mean bikes, and you know,
I won't say
Escalades,
who, but
Lamborghinis.
I've seen some photos and I was like,
Yeah, most people
fuck.
know.
And I know a lot of the boys that were back here in certain outfits and I see them back there and I was like, fuck, killing it.
So imagine like just Kiwi-born crims here seeing all of that. They're just like, whoa, you
I
know what I
want
mean?
that.
So a lot of chapters here of New Zealand biker gangs ended up breaking off and ended up joining, you know, a lot of these Aussie clubs that were coming through because of money, you know. But yeah, so when I came back here, yeah, the scene had changed a lot, you know. When I come back here, so you know how we talked about how I went to New Zealand and people are sort of like, oh, he's from New Zealand, you know, he's from New Zealand. So when I come back, it's the reverse now. I've come back here and people are like, oh, he came from Oz, he came from
Oh,
Oz, you
really?
know. Yeah, brother, yeah. So things changed a lot with the whole deportee thing here.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? It's not something we talk about. So it's definitely, this is, you know, informative because people, I guess, wouldn't understand this. And it's
Like for
such a
example.
shift, isn't it?
Yeah, like for example, like I said, when I was here in Australia, in New Zealand, before I went to Oz, I didn't know anything about Australia. You know what I mean? I knew absolutely nothing about it, nothing about the gang scene. We don't even know if there are gangs in Australia. You know what I mean? That's how much we know about it. But when I come back here, everybody's talking about Australia. You know what I mean? Everybody's sort of talking about the Oz gangs.
And you've been there and lived it, been in the jail system with the G family.
I was shocked. I was shocked when I came back here and was like, man, people know about Australia now. You know, and also the rap scene, you know what I mean? Everyone, the rap scene in Oz, you know, it's a thing here now. Well, man, when I was coming back here, people that never even been to Oz are saying like Eat Swa and Eshe, and I'm like, what? I was shocked. I couldn't believe
it. Oh, dear.
The rocking TNs. I'm like, what?
Oh, dear. I don't even get me started on this whole conversation, bro. Fuck me, dude. We started that shit.
Yeah,
I'm talking, like, I'm 45, and we started Pig Latin. Eshe just means yes. That's what I always say to cunts. They sit there and they go, Eshe, lad, what are you? Yes, boy. You just say yes to everything, do you? Because that's all it means. What is it? Eshe. TNs, what's TN? TNs weren't even around, mate. Let's go back to the original, you know, Nike Air 180s and the Hirachis and the first, you know, Air Maxes and the Nike Air Structure. And, like, man, there's so much more besides TNs that were around back then. Yeah. Well, we started a language because we were criminals that we never wanted, and we were running in on banks. We were doing, you know, back safes. We were searchers. We were ram raiding like the biggest labels, and we were. You can go back in time, and they used to put us in the People and Picture magazines, right? This is long before digital magazines, getting chased along harbour bridges. You know, over 200 km in Porsches. Like the boys used to kill it. The boys, the ram raids, the whole ram raid scene, like even the ATM ram raids. Mate, these kids they still had fucking nappies on. And all of a sudden, Eshe, lad, got me TNs and that, lad, I'm fucking killing it, lad. Look at this. Got me fucking Gucci bag, lad. Me little fucking Swiss tick cat. Oh, bro. Listen, I got nothing to get. I find it humorous. And, you know, it's become, I don't know what you call it. Is it a fashion? I don't know what it is.
Man.
It's a culture. That's the word.
Look what you started, man.
Man, gee whiz, but I just
created a monster.
I could sit down and talk to these 14, 15 year old kids in the language, and I'm 45, and I could probably speak it better than what they would even understand it. We twist and turn it that much that you wouldn't know what we're saying.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, crack up.
Well, that's an interesting insight.
yeah, brother. Yeah.
So what, for you, what was the turning point? Like, I mean, you know, all this aside, and we sit here and we have a giggle and laugh, but there is a much, much healthier spiritual side to you today. There's a really genuine good human there that's doing some good things in your community. And let's talk about that, because I think we've talked enough about, you know, the other side, we'll call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's Dave today? And you do run a very successful podcast, and I don't want to go down your fucking rabbit hole, okay? So keep your rabbit hole on your fucking podcast. Because me and theories and shit like this, I love you. I love the intelligence of you.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I just can't let my head get into all this fucking...
Yeah,
oh, I tried.
You'll never come back, brother.
I tried, Dave, and I went, I can't tune in. I just can't tune in. I've got to tune out. But you know what? Hey, that's your niche. That's your thing. And that's what you're passionate about, brother. And go for it. But there's so much more to you today, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, I mean, just to touch on what you said as well. So look, now I'm a man of God, brother. You know, I'm deeply spiritual. Been baptized, man. I gave my life to God. Yeah. It got bad there, you know, with the drugs and stuff and the alcohol, man. You know, I'm still using, I went, you know, and I was in depression as well, coming back here, deep depression, anxiety, brother, panic attacks at work, you know.
Life is tough.
You know how it is, man. When you coming from prison, man, you can hide it, you know what I mean? You got, you know, you can hide the inside stuff that's going on. But, you know, I was getting physically ill as well. You know, I was getting physically sick. So it was tough, brother. So I eventually just ended up finding God, brother. You know, long story short, he sort of led me in the way of what I'm doing now. So, yeah, I run a podcast. I actually have two. So I have two YouTube channels.
Go on, give them both a plug.
Yeah. So, one
of them. For the conspiracist.
So I'm a conspiracy theorist. So that's my other. Mainly I got a one called The Fallon Show. So this one I sort of just well, basically trying to do what you're doing by the side, interview people that I've done time with in Melbourne.
You do, and you've had some great guests. Great guests.
So I get a lot of former bikies on there, a lot of former, you know, crims that have turned their lives around, man, that have, yeah, man, just stories of redemption, brother. Yeah. You know how it is. So yeah, it is. I like to share their stories, so that's been going well. And yeah, that's called The Felon Show. And yeah, I have another conspiracy theorist type one where, well, it's a history channel, believe it or not.
It is a history channel. Yeah. It is very informative if you want to know about history. Just fuck me, Dad. It's like a vortex.
Yeah, yeah.
You start to lean over the edge and you start to go, oh shit, I'm getting pulled in.
Yeah, so I consider myself an alternative historian as well. So that's
is that what you call it, alternative?
Yeah, alternative history. So yeah, I just speak on history that isn't taught to us in schools and things like that, and that's called The Felon Show as well. But The Felon Show with King Dave, so it's
a Felon Show name. With a twist of Cyclone. Ooh, here it comes. You can hear it. So you're involved in a lot of community and charity work. You give back.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a sec, because I think it's really important for people to see that, you know, a man like yourself who was basically lost in the system, if I can put it that way, to gang, drugs, alcoholism, life in general, and here you are helping the less fortunate today with a heart pure.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like, you know, with this, and even in a lot of interviews I do in my podcast, we do talk about prison, we do talk about all of those things, and we even have a laugh, you know, about all of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, the reality of it is there is nothing funny about it. You know what I mean? There's definitely nothing funny about it. Like I said, you know, those last 2 years inside were hell for me. Didn't think I was going to make it out of there. You know, thought I was going to neck myself, you know, all of that. So that's something I make clear even on my own podcast. Even though we might have a joke about all of those things, there's nothing really funny about it. But
nothing at all. I back you on that 1,000,000%.
But yeah, so I just feel that now, I feel that God put me through all of those things. You know, he sent me on that journey so that now I could sort of go back there and do what I'm doing now, you know, being able to go out there or on the streets and being able to connect with these homeless, because it's rampant here in Auckland, you know.
Oh, that was my next question. How is it over there at the moment with that the homelessness and the poverty levels?
Yeah, it's pretty bad here in Auckland. So it's I consider it a blessing for us to be able to go down there, you know, and sort of put some sort of a light in these people's lives. It's good, you know. Like, currently I'm working on a short movie where I can sort of share their stories and just share the plight of what's going on, sort of expanding on my podcast stuff, you know, just moving into doing short movies, you know, little documentaries.
Yeah, I like that.
Maybe even, you know, start a production company eventually. That's sort of where I'm going with all of this. But I definitely think that God put me through all of those things to get me where I am now. You know, I mean, I'm sure you can sympathize with that. I mean, if I've never been to...
I'm a big believer. Big believer that, you know, I wouldn't be here today had I not walked the path that I walked. People often say, you know, what are your regrets? Well, I think my only regret is not seeing one of my four children born and him growing up without a dad in the first 3 years. Outside of that, I don't really have any regrets, because I wouldn't be who I am today. And I know that the path that you're on now is a path that hopefully enlightens others to not walk down the same streets that you once walked, making those choices, those negative choices in life, because... it will only end up one of two places, and that's dead or jail.
Yeah, exactly right, brother.
Each of my guests, I ask before we finish up that if there's a paragraph or a sentence or something important that you could leave here for our listeners today that may inspire just one person from your experience, what would it be?
Man, amongst so many other things, brother, one huge one would be don't worry about what other people think. You know, that is just such a huge one.
Simple but powerful, eh?
Yeah, you know, I mean, me when I started, well, you know, when I started doing this podcast thing, that was always in the back of my head. You know, what are people going to think? You know, what are people that knew me before, what are they going to think? Even a lot of guests on my show, you know, that's always a big one as well. You know, they're scared to reach out, they're scared to make the next step in life because they're scared of what people are going to think of them. You know, at the end of the day, you've really just got to worry about yourself, man. Like, I think, you know, people going on a lot nowadays about their day ones and their day one homies and things like that. And I'm just
ain't no day ones. You're gonna go for 100 day ones and you'll be still looking over your shoulder going, fuck, I'm sitting here in a room empty.
Yeah, no, nah,
exactly, yeah, bro, but... my bro, yeah, fucking day one, bro. No, bro, you ain't day shit.
Yeah, no, nah,
you're just another
no
bad bum in the shower.
Yeah, there's not no such thing as day ones, man. You will come to that realization sooner or later. There were so many times I was kept back in life because I'm showing loyalty to my day ones. You know, so many things I could have done, but I didn't want to because of my day ones. It's just a bad trap, you know. Just yeah, man, just sometimes you just gotta, I just believe nowadays in life, you go through life, you meet people. Some of them you're going to connect with, some you will connect with for a bit and then move on from. But life is a journey, you know what I mean? Don't get stuck with the same people. Don't get stuck with that same crowd because they'll drag you down, you know, for sure.
Amen to that, my brother. Dave, I thank you very much for your time. It's been an honor to finally sit down and lock this down with you. And I really hope that everybody out there takes a really positive message from this chat that we've had today. I think it's quite empowering, you know, like you've been there, you've seen it, you've done it, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. And blessings to you, bro. I mean, good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, keep pushing forward and keep being that shining light for the next gen.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, brother. And yeah, really appreciate you letting me on, brother.
Brother, it's God's will. I didn't let you on. He told me to connect with you.
Yeah, that's right, brother. Yep,
can exactly I get an amen? Right. Amen. Hallelujah. Much love to you, brother.
All right, see, love you, brother. We'll talk soon, huh?
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, for the record, for the record, for the record. For the record, for the record.